Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Governor Kasich warned everyone that he didn't expect any standing ovations once his proposed budget was unveiled last week, and he's not getting any from the nursing home industry in Ohio, which is the focus of his plan for Medicaid spending reforms. The plan does not cut the rolls, but does cut reimbursement rates to hospitals, managed care providers, including doctors, and nursing homes. In the case of nursing homes, the reforms in part would make it easier for folks who can and want to go home, but for those for whom that is not possible, the benefits are less clear. Coming up later, we'll hear from Cindy Farson. She's director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, and also Peter Van Runkel. He's executive director for the Ohio Healthcare Association. Right now, we welcome Sarah Cliff. Sarah is a healthcare reporter for Politico, and she is co-author of Politico Pulse, a daily health policy briefing. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Governor Kasich's proposed budget cuts reimbursements, but not coverage. Is that possible?
It is. Under the federal health care reform law, states are specifically barred from cutting any coverage. So anything that was in place about a year ago when the federal law passed, they can't touch those populations. So what you see states doing, what Governor Kasich is doing, and what you see folks doing across the country is eyeing other ways to get their Medicaid costs down. And a lot of times that ends up targeting reimbursement rates, which seem like one of the few things that governors do have control over and one of the things they can cut back without pushing up against federal regulations.
But what is the sense about how it pushes up against care and the quality of care?
Right. So, I mean, that's the big concern here, and that's, you know, obviously what you see a lot of folks concerned with in Ohio and in other states is if you keep cutting reimbursement rates, that doctors are going to have very little interest in participating in the Medicaid system. It's already much lower in terms of reimbursement than Medicare. So, you know, there is a lot of concern about what this means for quality and just in terms of having a network of doctors who participate in the Medicaid program, that if reimbursement rates are cut low enough that doctors are just going to throw up their hands and say, it's really not worth it for us anymore. So there is a definite concern about how this affects the whole safety net that Medicaid is supposed to be providing.
The governor and others before him have made a big point of criticizing the lobbying arm of the nursing home industry in Ohio and the nation. Is that the case throughout the country?
I think you do see those kind of battles throughout the country where nursing homes, you know, want to advocate for the services that they're providing. But, you know, governors are in a very tough spot right now that, you know, they're looking at these Medicaid budgets that have grown exponentially throughout the recession at the same time that their own budgets have been squeezed during the recession. And they're really looking for, you know, any kind of flexibility that they have in their budget. So if they see, you know, any space, whether it be, you know, the nursing homes or other providers, they're really going to be drilling down and, you know, trying to cut out anything they can. Obviously, nursing homes would, you know, take issue with the claims that, you know, they're overbilling or that their services are being overpaid. But, you know, for governors, they're really in a tough spot, and they're looking at anything that they can possibly scale back on in kind of an economically challenging time.
It's also a politically challenging constituency, though, to be making these kinds of cuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree that, you know, it's a lot of folks who really depend on the system and are, you know, going to be affected by it. So I don't think it's going to go by the wayside quietly or anything like that. I think, you know, you're going to see folks be very vocal as they have been already, and you can expect them to continue to be as, you know, they're really trying to protect this program and the services it provides.
My guest is Sarah Cliff. She's a healthcare reporter for Politico and co-author of Political Pulse, a daily health policy briefing. If you have a question or comment for Sarah, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do you have a question about federal and state policy regarding Medicaid coverage? Give us a call and let us know. How are other states handling their Medicaid struggles? We've heard a lot about Arizona.
Right. So Arizona was the first state to petition the federal government to be allowed out of what's called maintenance of effort, which is that federal provision that requires states to maintain Medicaid eligibility at the same level they had when it was when the federal health reform law was passed. Arizona petitioned the government about 2 months ago to be let out of those requirements. And the federal government, Secretary Sebelius here in Washington, actually wrote back that they can make a lot of the cuts they wanted without violating some of those agreements. So now you see other states, a lot of Republican governors are, you know, talking about pursuing some kind of waiver from those maintenance of effort requirements. Just last week, Kansas Governor Sam Brownback sent a letter to Secretary Sebelius asking for more information about the maintenance of effort provision. So I think that's one of the things you really see a lot of governors talking about. There's also been a lot of chatter about block grants, grants where, you know, states will get a lump sum from the federal government and have a lot more control over that money because they're getting a very specific amount. A lot of the Republican governors who were here in D.C. a few weeks ago for their national convention were talking a lot about, you know, their interest in those block grants.
And how do those benefit them? Don't they still have to meet the same requirements for the federal funding?
They actually don't. Most of the states will negotiate some specific flexibilities with the block grant. So the idea is they say, we're going to keep our budget to this very specific block grant amount you're giving us. In return for that, you're going to let us manage the money in the way we see fit. So there's some questions, you know, Republican governors, what they're talking about right now is, you know, perhaps they could negotiate down some of those maintenance of effort provisions as they set up those block grant arrangements. So they're eyeing that as one path to flexibility. The federal government, however, isn't too keen to allow states to roll back their eligibility requirements. So it's unclear whether those block grants are actually a viable path that Republican governors are hoping they will turn out to be.
The Kasich administration has complained that just five states spend more per capita than Ohio residents on nursing homes. What goes into why is that? Why are some states spending more than others per capita?
You know, a lot of it really varies. The health delivery systems in the country are so disparate. So, you know, if you look at a state like Alaska, it costs a lot more to deliver health care there than it would in a state like New York, where it's very geographically concentrated. You know, Alaska delivering health care is a pretty big task, or Hawaii is another one that tends to run up pretty big health care costs. A lot of it's tied up in geography. It's also just efficiency. Some states have figured out better ways to do it. Other ones are still working their way through it. You know, since Medicaid is a state-based program, you do see a lot of variation, and it's tied up in, you know, a lot of very different factors.
Are there any states that are particularly taking a particularly creative approach, or would something like what Governor Kasich has proposed be considered a creative approach?
I think that's definitely considered a creative approach. Another one to watch is Florida, where they're looking at moving their entire Medicaid program into managed care, the idea being they would do contracts with private managed care providers who, through managing the care and better coordination, could bring down costs. So you do see a trend of a lot of governors looking at managed care programs as a way to scale back costs. So really, you know, everyone is looking, you know, all the governors are just like Governor Kasich in Ohio, looking at really strained budgets, looking at creative solutions. I don't think anyone would say they've figured it out yet. I think all of them are really feeling the pinch of their Medicaid budgets. But Florida is definitely one that's been kind of looking at a creative solution and one that I've been watching.
Wouldn't managed care or increasing the use of managed care increase just create another middleman in the operation?
There's fear of that, and that's something actually Connecticut ran into. And Connecticut is interesting because they're kind of a counter trend where they're looking at pulling out of some of the managed care work that they got involved in a few years ago, where, just like you suggested, they found, you know, they're being overcharged by the managed care companies. They're paying too much for the care that they're providing. So they're actually backing away. The hope in Florida is, you know, through the way that they structure it, that they can actually use competitive bidding to incentivize better care for lower costs. But I think, you know, if you look over Connecticut, where they've been down this road and backed out of it, that there is a cautionary tale there about putting another middleman in the Medicaid process.
The as much as they want to improve the or increase the numbers of Medicaid recipients who are at home and receiving their benefits at home, it has changed a lot over the last couple decades. There's been a huge increase in home care, at least in Ohio. Is there a point, or does anybody have a sense about what that point of diminishing returns is? In other words, is there a tipping point where you can't have everybody at home?
Right. I don't know if we're at that point yet or where folks are talking about that point yet. You do definitely, I mean, even within the federal health care reform law, see like a very big push towards home care. Just a few weeks ago, the Department of Health and Human Services here sent out grants to 13 states for a program called Money Follows the Person, which was very much, you know, it was very much aimed at incentivizing home care, getting folks out of nursing homes and back into their own homes. At what point it hits diminishing returns, I think, is a very interesting question. We're not quite there yet because you haven't seen such a big push towards home care as you have in recent years. But I think, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, if, you know, there's folks who do want to be in the nursing homes who are missing out on those benefits, if those concerns start coming up, I think that's, you know, issue down, you know, a year or two in the future that states are going to be facing.
Are there concerns or legitimate concerns by nursing home interests for the economies of scale? In other words, how do they keep enough nursing homes out there so they're geographically accessible to families, for instance, of residents, and also maintain the care and do it at these lower reimbursement rates?
I think so. I think that's, especially in rural areas,
yes,
that's definitely a concern for how they serve those populations that have traditionally been underserved in terms of health services. And I think that's, you know, a very, very valid concern on their part. You know, how are they at lower reimbursement rates going to get folks to work in those rural communities that really need those health services? So I think when they're raising those concerns to the governor, you know, recently, and as I'm guessing they're certain to do in coming months, that, you know, they have a very valid point that if reimbursement rates are cut, they're going to have a lot more trouble keeping their doors open, attracting employees, and attracting doctors who, you know, have gotten really fed up with, you know, their salaries being constantly in peril. And the idea of going private, you know, where they have a much more reliable salary and, you know what they're going to be paid, you know, might be seeming more and more appealing if they're watching their reimbursements get slashed.
The federal stimulus money for Medicaid is about to dry up after 2 years. I guess it's July 1st it ends.
Yes.
What do you have any sense about what the overall impact of that is going to be?
It's going to be hard, and I think governors are really, you know, uncertain about what happens at that point. You know, about a year ago or last summer, we had a bunch of the governors flying into D.C. pleading for an extension of these, you know, enhanced Medicaid matching funds. The Republican-controlled House has basically, you know, said this is not going to be extended. These are running out in July. So while last year there was some uncertainty, will the federal government extend them? Will they not? And, you know, through lobbying, they did get those extended. This year, you know, it's kind of like coming up against reality, and it really looks like a cliff. I don't think you'll find, you know, a governor who said, you know, I've figured out the way to deal with this. You know, this is going to be fine for our state when these funds run out. I think all of them are looking at this as a very big challenge they're going to face, you know, come July, and trying to figure out through various budget proposals, like the one out there that you all are looking at in Ohio, how to deal with losing those funds that they've been relying on for 2 years.
Okay, Sarah Cliff, healthcare reporter for Politico. Thank you for joining us, Sarah. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Sarah Cliff. She's a healthcare reporter for Politico. Coming up, we will hear from two interested parties, Cindy Farson, director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, and also Peter Van Runkel of the Ohio Healthcare Association. We welcome your questions or comments for them. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. This is Ann Fisher, and All Sides.
Good morning. This is Eric French. We've got a chance of showers and thunderstorms possible today. High reaching 55 degrees. Tomorrow we have showers and thunderstorms again possible with a high of 66 degrees.
This is Ann Fisher, and All Sides with Ann Fisher is now on the new 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station. Every day, All Sides discusses the issues you are talking about, and now we want you to join the conversation on 89.7 FM. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher from 10 a.m. to noon every day on the new 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.
WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Wednesday at noon, it's the CMC 35th anniversary event featuring chimpanzee expert Jane Goodall. Tickets and more information are available at columbusmetroclub.org.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the impact on the state and on nursing homes. If and when the governor's proposed budget goes into effect, joining us now is Cindy Farson. Cindy has been the director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging for 17 years and has been in the field of aging for more than 30 years. It's located in Columbus. The agency administers more than $80 million a year in eight counties, including the state passport home care program. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also with us, Peter Van Runkle. Peter is the executive director for the Ohio Healthcare Association, the Ohio affiliate of the American Healthcare Association. It's Ohio's largest statewide trade association representing nonprofit and for-profit skilled nursing facilities, assisted living communities, and providers of services for people with developmental disabilities. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Just for our listeners, I wanted you to know we have invited Greg Moody. He's the director of the governor's new Office of Health Transformation to the show in person or by phone. He's been unable to fit us into his schedule. He's understandably very busy right now. As soon as he can, we will welcome him to the show, though, and he knows that. So we'll have him on as soon as possible. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also reach us via Facebook on the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. So, Peter, well, I guess, Cindy, more than 2 million poor and disabled Ohioans benefit from Medicaid for nursing home coverage. How many of those, and does anyone have any idea, how many of those could do as well, if not better, at home with home-based care?
I don't think we know exactly the number of that, but we do have a long history in Ohio of heavy use of nursing home care. When I started in the business, it was in the early 90s. About 90% of Ohioans got their long-term care from nursing homes, and only 10% in home care. It's now a mix of 58% get it in nursing homes and 42% in home care. The goal has been in the last 2 years, there's been a committee working, Pete's been on it, all the groups have been on it, to try and get it to 50-50 in Ohio, which people projected would save about $500 million. I think this administration would like to surpass that goal. So I don't know what the ideal number is, but I think our position has always been the development of options for people outside of a nursing home and then getting people to the right service when they need it. Of course, we need quality nursing homes. We need quality home care.
I was going to say, aren't those kinds of goals sort of artificial, which is why I asked the question in the first place. Do we have a sense of what the mix is of needs?
Right. You know, we have states like Oregon who always led the way with 75% of their people
in homes.
Mm-hmm. But they were developing in a very different way early on. They didn't have a lot of nursing homes. They developed the middle of the spectrum, more family homes for people to live in, that sort of thing. Ohio has an absence of maybe that middle spectrum of the adult homes, small homes that people could live in. And housing is a big issue as we try and have people in their homes or have people leave nursing homes. There's a big housing issue, affordable housing, accessible housing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that has to be done to build up the community before you make any kind of an extreme switch that you see in Oregon.
For example, for a lot of people, the most affordable option would be to stay home, perhaps, but their home is not accessible. They can't live at home anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly programs like ours, the Passport program, mm-hmm. We do help people try and make their homes more accessible. And so we work with people to make their homes accessible. But if they can't, you know, we have an assisted living option now. That's fairly new to Ohio. We were one of the last states on board to have a waiver for assisted living. So some people might not need all the care they get in a nursing home, but assisted living would work for them. So that's what we want to have is a whole spectrum of care for people. And then, of course, people with the most needs in a quality nursing home.
Peter Van Runkle, the governor has been very critical and has made a big point of criticizing the lobbying efforts by the nursing home industry over the years. Is it really nursing homes versus the rest of the state, nursing homes versus home care providers, that sort of thing?
Not at all. Our perspective is pretty much the same as Cindy's. We're in agreement with all of those efforts to try to expand home and community-based care, to try to give people options where they best fit in as far as the long-term care continuum. The problem that we have is not with any of those things. It's with the fact that the governor has proposed to cut our rates for the people we do take care of, the people who still need skilled nursing facility care, by $427 million over the next 2 years. And that goes along with a $380 million shortfall on the tax that we are charged and doesn't come back to us. So it's really about resources to take care of the skilled people that we have in our facilities and we would continue to have in our facilities, even if home care options and assisted living and so forth are expanded. Which we're all in favor of for those people who would choose those options and for which they're appropriate to their needs.
Greg Moody has said that how hospitals and nursing homes bill Medicaid for services is outdated. What is your estimation of how they bill for services? How long have they been billing the same way? And there have been others who have criticized the industry for this complex, almost arcane process.
Well, actually, I can't speak to hospitals.
Right.
I don't know much about their reimbursement system. But as far as skilled nursing facilities are concerned, in 2005, the General Assembly and at that time the Taft administration, and Greg was part of that administration, mm-hmm. created a new methodology for reimbursing skilled nursing facilities. Unfortunately, that methodology has not been fully implemented. OHCA has been advocating for that. Over the last several years, but it hasn't happened yet. What's happening here, though, with the governor's proposed budget is that they are slashing that system that was put in place or partially put in place 6 years ago rather than fully implementing it. They are fully implementing it, but at a much lower level than was originally formulated.
Why wasn't it fully implemented in the first place?
There was concern at the time that it was first put in that that system would result in steep cuts to certain facilities, and so there was a choice made by the General Assembly to phase it in, which made sense at the time. You need to give people an opportunity to adjust, but unfortunately that phase-in has been extended several times since then, far beyond what would have been reasonable or expected when it was first created.
What facilities are you talking about would have been?
Facilities, high-cost facilities, facilities that were being paid, reimbursement rates that were well above the average for the state.
And why would there be a facility out there getting paid more than the average? What kind of facilities are the ones where there's a really high concentration of high level of care?
Well, no, not necessarily, because the new system, the one that was not fully implemented, does align reimbursement with acuity, with the needs of the patients.
Okay.
Under the old system, though, it was based on cost. So basically what you spent for the large part drove what you got paid. So the facilities that had high rates were those that spent a lot of money on care or otherwise, and not necessarily those with higher acuity.
My guests are Cindy Farson. Cindy's a director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, and also Peter Van Runkle. He is the executive director for the Ohio Healthcare Association that represents, among other things, nursing homes in Ohio. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the proposed cuts to the Medicaid system in Ohio, and particularly how they affect nursing homes in Ohio. Tell me, Peter, you've said that the acuity is going up every year in Ohio's nursing homes. And you know, Cindy, jump in, you know, if this is applicable, which means the people you care for are getting sicker and sicker. How is that happening?
The reason why that's happening is exactly what Cindy explained earlier. Ohio has been, over time, transitioning to more of a balanced system for care for our seniors and people with disabilities. And as the expansion of home and community-based care has occurred, people with typically lower needs are being served that way. And the folks that are left in the skilled nursing facilities, which has been a declining number every year for the past 10 or 12 years, are people who have greater needs, which is appropriate, and that's why we exist, is to serve those folks that can't be served in their homes or that are coming out of a hospital and need a short-term rehabilitation stay, which has been a big area of growth for us. But it is true that our acuity has been going up, and that's why.
You've also calculated that some 7,000 jobs will be lost. How do you figure that?
Well, we took a look at the $427 million cut that the administration is proposing, and we looked at the cost of a job in a long-term care facility, a skilled nursing facility specifically, which is for our state-tested nursing assistants is about $30,000 a year. And we just did the math from there. Obviously, that $427 million is a two-year figure, so we divided that in half and then divided it by the $30,000 per job.
Cindy Farson, you're facing cuts as well. Tell us about what sorts of cuts agencies on aging have been facing.
Well, this administration is looking to increase the number of people into our programs, our Passport program, by 15%. That's probably a conservative number. At the same time, they are asking for 15% cuts to the people that get people into home care, which are our assessors, our case managers, the people that manage, work with families, the people that screen people to come into the program. So about 200 people across the state, we would have 200 fewer people across the state doing those very primary functions to get people into home care, at the same time trying to move a lot more people into home care. We think that's probably not a good move. More importantly are the service packages to our clients. Right now we have a very conservative service package, probably the lowest cost service package of any waiver in the state. We spend about $1,127 on each client to keep them at home, and this administration is asking for a cut of 8% the first year, 15% the second year, with a combined 23% cut to that service package. So by
and this is for that home care that they
the
want to
care.
Have
right.
more people do. Okay.
So that would take the service packages down to $779. At some point, you're pushing people back into a nursing home because they're not getting enough home care services. I mean, we certainly are working with the administration on ways to be more efficient. You know, maybe you can do that through better IT systems. You know, there's always ways you can trim costs off a service plan. However, there is a point where if you're a working family and you're able to keep someone home because you've got daycare 3 days a week, once you start taking some of that away, the family says, I can't do it anymore. And now you're working at cross purposes with your goal. So we think that those things need to be examined and not just accepted that, oh, we're going to cut these service packages to people by this amount of money. So we're concerned about that.
You can give us a call if you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. And Sue Ann from Clintonville, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have two questions. Isn't the nursing home issue a little bit like public schools? I mean, the census is down. There aren't as many people going into nursing homes, so don't the nursing homes have to shrink like the schools? And then I have a question for Cindy. Farson, you know, what's a waiver? And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Peter, do you want to talk about the, if you don't have as many people to serve, why is it more expensive to serve them?
Absolutely, and thank you for the question, Sue Ann. What we're talking about here is what we get paid per unit of service. There's no question that by serving fewer people, it should cost less, and it does. Actually, there has been zero growth in the amount that the state has spent overall for skilled nursing facility care over the last 5 years, which contrasts to growth of 26% in the overall Medicaid program. So we have no concerns about that. Our concern is about on a per-unit basis. When we're taking care of sicker people, we're supposed to receive less resources to care for those individuals. And it would be like if the school system, and then I realize they're under the gun here too, but if the school received a lower amount per pupil to take care of or to provide education to those pupils.
Okay. Cindy?
Well, waivers are in place. Nursing home care is an entitlement. So if you are eligible for nursing home care through finances or disability, you are entitled to a nursing home bed. You waive that restriction, and the state can say, we will spend this much money, waive that restriction, and put people in home care. So,
Or assisted living.
So we are more the option that can be limited. And so what we've seen in the past is where there hasn't been enough money, you've closed the door to the waivers, to the option. And then, of course, we don't think that's a good situation because you're forcing people into nursing home care that could take place. So what we're trying to do, and I think this whole effort has been a unified budget. So there's one line item, which this administration is supporting, one line item, and the person, money follows the person, as you heard the previous speaker talk about. And so you're not, nursing home is not the entitlement. The person gets a choice of what type of care they need.
Okay, we have to take another break. Before we do, I'll read an email from Pam in Clintonville. Many do not do well in nursing homes, often because they are cut off from the things that they love, friends, neighbors, pets, and treasured memories. Keeping a loved one in the home, however, can be a challenge. Making homes and vehicles accessible, providing ready access to home nursing and physician care, keeping connected to church and other activities, and providing a safe as well as comfortable environment, these are the things which would allow the elderly and infirm both happiness and dignity at the end of their lives. And Pam is an MD. She lives in Clintonville. So we'll take a break now. When we return, we'll continue our conversation about the impact of proposed budget cuts on Medicaid and nursing home and the care of the aged in Central Ohio. Stay with us. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Coming up at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher, we'll hear some issues raised by the U.S. bombing in Libya as part of an allied force in support of a U.N. Security Council resolution with The Nation managing editor Roanne Carey and OSU military history professor Peter Monsoor, retired U.S. Army colonel. At 11:40, we'll talk with local businessman Hamdi Solomon, who is organizing Central Ohio supporters in solidarity with protesters in Libya trying to overthrow the Gaddafi regime.
Listen to local news from the award-winning WOSU News team and national news from NPR on the new 89.7 NPR News. And be sure to enjoy the best in classical music on the new Classical 101. Classical music all day, every day. It's all news on 89.7 NPR News and all classical on Classical 101. For more information and to stream our services online, visit WOSU.org.
On the next Fresh Air, how pizza, pasta, and olive oil came to America. Food writer John Mariani talks about his new book, How Italian Food Conquered the World. Mariani is also the author of the Encyclopedia of American Food and Drink, and he writes about food for Esquire magazine. Join us.
and Fresh Air is at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the impact on nursing homes and other care for people who need to be at home or nursing home assisted living, home care, what the impacts will be on those, the funding for those programs, given Governor Kasich's first budget proposal. Slashes a lot of Medicaid payments to hospitals and nursing homes and doctors and an overhaul of the program, which is expected to grow by about 30%. The next couple years. So if you have a question or comment for us, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Joining us in the studio is Cindy Farson. Cindy's the director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. And with us by phone, Peter Van Runkle. He is the executive director for the Ohio Healthcare Association. And Peter, you're still in the basement of the State House, right?
Yeah, that's right, in the Senate building.
How are the hearings going? I mean, what happens at the State House when you are lobbying for these sorts of things?
Well, it's really about education. We need to, and we do it very conscientiously, educate the members of the General Assembly about the impact of certain proposals on our members and the people that they serve, and explain to them any options or any alternatives that we may be able to come up with, and then obviously we hope that they understand and do something about our concerns.
Are you getting any pushback from lawmakers given the criticism that you've been taking from the governor over, you know, your lobbying efforts and the history?
Well, not really, because a lot of what the governor's been saying, if you boil it down, has been we need to take care of mom and dad at home. And, again, we don't have any problem with that if that's what mom and dad want and that's what the best thing is for mom and dad, given their circumstances. But as Cindy explained, there's a lot of things in this budget that really aren't helping and expand and enhance home and community-based services. I wasn't even aware of the service package piece. I did know that passport providers were getting their rates cut by 3%, which I don't think does a whole lot to encourage home and community-based services. And I was aware of the administrative reduction that the AAAs were going to be taking, which also goes in that direction. So we're just a little bit perplexed about, you know, some of the governor's comments about expanding home and community-based services and making sure that mom and dad can be taken care of at home when those cuts are in place. And then for those people who are still in the skilled nursing facilities, and there will be many thousands of them because that's what they need, we're also seeing massive cuts. So it doesn't really add up.
Cindy, is it, given as far as home-based services go in Ohio, are there enough? Are they ready to absorb an influx such as they're talking about through this budget? Well,
certainly the 15% that they're projecting coming into Passport, we can certainly handle that. And at the rate that the change has been happening in Ohio, people are certainly adapting to that. We're looking at we have a program called Choices, which allows people to hire family and friends. So we're looking at other ways to provide care also. But quality is an important piece of this. And being able to monitor the agencies that we have. We have about 300 agencies in the region that we monitor that have contracts with us to provide all these different services for families. So that's another piece that has to be watched. You don't want home care out there without the proper monitoring in place so that families can feel secure that the people coming into their homes are doing a good job for them. So all that is part of that. When you're making these cuts, you have to look at the quality, as Pete says.
And Pete, could some of the people you talked about, the loss of 7,000 jobs, couldn't some of the people who work in nursing homes transfer their skills to the home-based setting?
I suppose that's conceivable, but the problem is that those home-based settings are going to have fewer dollars to pay for caregivers, and at the same time, the quality of the services that our skilled nursing facilities deliver are going to be harmed by having fewer staff on board. We took a look at our quality measures over the last 5 years, and we've seen some significant improvement in a number of areas, and we're very concerned that that's going to be, you know, completely pushed the other direction by these cuts.
Carol from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. I have a comment related to nursing home charges and so on. My father was in a nursing home assisted living facility in 2005, and I thought the overall care was good, but it was very expensive. He was paying for it himself, and the billing was extremely confusing. And I finally went down and sat down with the billing manager or whoever's in charge, and I sat down with him for an hour. And I still didn't understand the bill for 1 month. And I ended up feeling that he was either deliberately, you know, it was either deliberately confusing or it just wasn't, they weren't making an effort to make it transparent to the customer.
Same thing.
Yeah, it comes down to the same thing.
So yeah.
That's...
Pete, I mean, that's your average consumer, I guess.
Well, I'm college educated. I actually consider myself a little bit. When I'm confused, I firstly think they're trying to put something over on me.
Okay.
Because I figure I will understand it if it's understandable. But yeah, for the average person, or even more, I mean, it's just I don't know if this experience was typical, but that was my experience.
Peter.
I certainly sympathize with where she's coming from, because although I don't at this time have anybody in my family that's in an assisted living or skilled nursing facility, I certainly have difficulty deciphering all the bills that I get from the hospitals and doctors that take care of my family members. And transparency is important, and I think one of the things, and I suspect she's talking about assisted living, one of the things that happens there is that you have different levels of services in an assisted living facility, depending on whether the person needs nursing care and so forth. And sometimes that can create some additional complexity. They're billing things on an a la carte basis, if you will. But certainly we try to encourage our members to bill in a transparent way, and that's unfortunate that was not her experience, but hopefully we'll do better in that way.
Thanks, Carol, for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Diana from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. This question is for Peter. My question is, I understand that some states have actually created incentives and bought back nursing home bed licenses as an attempt to kind of right-size the market. And I was wondering if the association supports that kind of, instead of the 7% cut, if there was some incentive to actually just decrease the number of beds available in the state.
Diana, that's a very good question, and it's something we've been looking at, because Greg Moody has told us that, you know, part of where the administration is coming from is they think that there are too many skilled nursing facility beds out there. Now, we would say that, you know, starving everybody is not the way to address that issue, but we've been trying to look at, are there other ways to do that? There actually was some legislation, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, that would have created a bed buyback program in the state of Ohio, and it was put into one of the budget bills, but then the Senate president at that time objected to it, because in order to buy back beds, you have to spend some money, and there was a cost to it, and so it came out of the bill.
Diana?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your call. If you'd like to give us a call, we have a few minutes left, 614-292-8513. We also take emails. You can go to allsides@wosu.org and send your email there. Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for the program. I'm mentally ill, and I'm currently living in a nursing home, and I'd like to know how it's going to affect me.
Steve, one of the things we're concerned about, this is Pete Van Runkle, one of the things we're concerned about in the budget bill that hasn't even been mentioned so far in this show is that they're going to cut the payments for community mental health agencies delivering services to people who are in skilled nursing facilities. Mm-hmm. There's a $39 million price tag that they're squeezing out of that. I don't know if you get any services from the community mental health agency here, mm-hmm. But they're going to completely eliminate that, and that's another concern because there are, as in your case, there are people who have mental illness and are residing in skilled nursing facilities across the state, and they deserve to get those services just like everyone else.
I don't understand why all of a sudden we're putting money ahead of people. It just doesn't sound very ethical.
Okay. Steve, thanks for your call. Peter, how many people who are mentally ill make up the nursing home population in Ohio? Do we know?
There's different numbers that have been thrown around, but at any given time, there are approximately 80,000 people living in skilled nursing facilities in Ohio. Of those, there's about 51,000 who are on Medicaid. Of that population, the best number I've seen is about 2,500 have severe and persistent mental illness. There are many more who have maybe 8,000 total who have some kind of mental health diagnosis, mm-hmm. But it may not be a major part of their care needs.
Okay. Did you want to say something? Okay. Caller from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes. I just can't help but feeling there's something missing in terms of an economist really explaining to us why it would be economical to keep people at home versus in one place. And I'm looking at this not just for the elderly, but people like me who would need a nursing home for surgery, recovery, and mm-hmm. so forth. And I know there was something alluded to a couple weeks ago in Columbus on the record that maybe certifications of care workers are not as high in home care, and I wish an economist would really explore this, because when I think of nurses and people providing meals and all the care needed, when I think of them driving all over town to care for people living in 2,000 square foot houses or something versus people located in one spot in a nursing home, the math is just not making sense to me. Can anyone?
Yeah, well, Cindy?
Well, the fact is that when someone comes out of a hospital and they need skilled care, that a nursing home is where they need to be. There are certain things that it certainly is more economical to have everyone there that needs medical care. But the fact is a lot of nursing home care has been and is custodial care that doesn't require skilled nurses. And so you have a program like ours, and I mentioned we can keep people at home for a third of the cost of what it costs for someone to be in a nursing home bed. So that's the economics of it. If everyone that is eligible for nursing home care was in a nursing home instead of a home care situation, you would be spending three times as much per person.
So skilled nursing are people who can give medications, can give shots, can take blood pressure, all of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And unskilled care are the people who change the beds, who
give you
bathe,
a bath. That's
who,
right.
But there's
transport
also,
you know.
Often there's also rehabilitation, though, physical therapy.
Right. And those people can come into the home. And that is often a Medicare cost. And this administration wants to coordinate more Medicare and Medicaid costs. And you'll hear, if Greg Moody comes on the show, quite a bit about that. We talked earlier about managed care, which is something this administration is I think, exploring. And we see in the budget, we want to learn more. $176 million, the dispatch listed as a new managed care passport program. We want to know exactly what they mean by that. The second year of this budget is very vague. They want to combine waivers. They want to look at different things. We have a researcher from Florida coming to our conference in April, Larry Polifka, who is going to talk to us about Florida attempts at managed care. You see it in Arizona and Minnesota. We have questions.
Thank you, caller. I want to get one more call in. Fran from Columbus, you're on the air. We have just about a minute or so left. Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to ask Cindy about the passport program. How does she think it's going to affect the ones that are on there now and the ones in the future that are coming on with the new budget?
Well, as I said, there are cuts that we're concerned about. Taking a care package from $1,100 down to $779 will impact people. And if we do have to cut those care plans, we'll certainly do it with our case managers trying to have the least harm to the least amount of people. But it has an impact and may drive more people back into nursing homes, which is a cross purpose of this. So what we hope is that future people coming in will be able to be assessed quickly. Right now we have 70 case managers for 70 people per case manager. This budget would drive it more to 100 to 1. We think that's not a good thing for people in home care. We need face-to-face. We need to know how people are doing. We need to check on them. So we think some of these things are cross purposes to good home care and the eventual goal of this administration.
Fran, are you in – do you use passport?
No. Okay. I use the passport, no.
Right.
I know a lot of people that do.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call.
Okay. Thank you.
We're just about out of time. I want to thank my guests, Peter Van Runkle of the Ohio Healthcare Association. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
I hope you'll return when we know more.
Absolutely.
And Cindy Farson of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. Cindy, thanks for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We will continue the conversation, and we'll also make sure that we invite Greg Moody of the Kasich administration to join us as well. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be – and thanks for listening. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.